Welcome back to Murrah and Bugs Podcast. I hope you were here for our last one, and I hope you have been following us on Spotify or on Anchor. Well, let's get started. We'll be starting with the Transylhogany Lunatic Asylum. This asylum was built in the mid-1800s and opened in 1864. It was only supposed to house 250 mentally ill patients, but by the 1950s, it had roughly around 2,400 patients. Many patients were epileptic, alcoholics, drug addicts, and uneducated mental defectives. Due to overcrowding, patients were trapped in small rooms, living in their own filth, using broken beds, and living without no heating. Many violent patients were left unattended and alone. Some that were deemed uncontrollable were left and locked in cages. At one point in time, two roommates took their roommate and tried to hang him with a bedsheet on a curtain rod. When this plan failed, they stuck his head underneath the bedpost and jumped on it until his head was smashed in and he unfortunately passed away. The place was so violent and disturbed that one nurse was said to have disappeared. Many thought she went home and decided never to return, but when she was found 2 months later at the bottom of an unused staircase, police knew that she had been killed by patients and left at the bottom to rot alone. Return after this break to hear about the cruel intentions of a doctor. Dr. Walter Freeman was the doctor with cruel intentions. He was a lobotomist and he created the ice pick method. The ice pick method was a way where he put a metal point of a rod into the eyeball and reached all the way to the frontal lobe. This would leave patients with blood hemorrhaging and brain damage. This was considered a huge success until high problems started rising up. Dr. Walter Freeman even practiced on JFK's sister using the ice pick method. It failed, and she ended up in the hospital for the rest of her life. There are many other crazy stories that have happened at this asylum. Come back for more after this break.
Our first story of the day is of George Edward Body. George was reported that he had a fight with another patient. There were no weapons involved, but the other patient he was fighting with, named David, tried to choke George shortly after the argument. Now people find this very suspicious because George wasn't a violent person and was a pacifist. Another case of Brat Scott B. Brian supposedly disappeared for 8 days until he was found badly decomposed. Local authorities said that he committed suicide. Another incident of Merle Creamer. Merle was a African-American housewife. On an early morning, she was found strapped to her bed with mental attendants. She had been strangled with a bedsheet. Her roommate was found on the other side of the room. When questioned about the murder, she replied that Merle had sexually advised at her. Many do not believe this because her roommates report for her therapist. It is reported that she had victimizing problems. So it is very suspicious that she had Merkel made these events.
Our next story is of a gentleman named Ivan Hoover. Ivan started out as a football player and received an injury during a game. Professionals just believed that it was a small fracture until later when he became more slowed with many things that were not difficult before. They found that he had received a skull fracture but were too late to help. So his parents took care of him. He had a wandering feeling and wanted to explore the world. He felt as if his parents wouldn't approve and they thought that they wouldn't agree. So he killed both of his parents. When police officers searched the home, they found the mom in the kitchen and the dad in the basement. Ivan was nowhere to be found. Police drained the family's pond, seeing as they thought after realizing what he had done, he may have committed suicide and drowned in the pond. They found no body, but did find Ivan's pants and a mattock. When police finally found Ivan, he said he had no idea that police were looking for him, and he asked to visit his parents' graves. Many said that he showed true grief for what he had done. He was not convicted of murder or got the death penalty, but instead sentenced to Transylhogany Lunatic Asylum. At the asylum, the urge to wander happened again, and he jumped the fence. He was found 5 days later, safe. And then a few months later, he jumped the fence yet another time. This time it took authorities 8 days to find Ivan. He was found and returned safely.
Our last story for this insane sanium is George Mrazek. George was believed to have died at the hospital. His body was brought for a burial for the funeral. Many relatives and friends said that he didn't look like himself. But past this idea for the fact that he had been sick for a while. After the finalization of his death, his sister was finally able to grieve for him. A week after the funeral, his sister got a letter in the mail. The letter stated that he had recovered from his illness. Her friends investigated this and realized when they went to the same asylum that they had gotten the identification process all wrong and had buried the wrong man. Even after that incident, he was still legally pronounced dead. Come back for more crazy, spooky stories after this break.
Instead of continuing the scary places, we have decided to read some short scary stories online that we have found and talk about them. The first one is about a ghost story found on Reddit, and it's really super creepy. Mommy told me never to go in the basement, but I wanted to see what was making that noise. It kind of sounded like a puppy, and I wanted to go see the puppy. So I opened the basement door and tiptoed down a bit. I didn't see a puppy, and then Mommy yanked me out of the basement and yelled at me. Mommy had never yelled at me before, and it made me sad, and I cried. Then Mommy told me never to go in the basement again, and she gave me a cookie. That made me feel better, so I didn't ask her why the boy in the basement was making noise like a puppy or why he had no feet or hands. I know, that one's, like, really creepy.
Okay. That is so weird. Okay, so our next one is named Nunchucks. Michelle Froelich Young had a strange experience with her two-year-old daughter, submitted by the movie pilot. When my daughter was two, I found her twirling paper tissue tubes tied with twine in the air. I asked her what she was doing. She said she was practicing her nunchucks. I was very confused as she had no way of knowing what they were. I asked her what she meant, and she said that that admin had told her how to make them and showed her each night how to use them. She went on to say that Adam told her to practice because she may need to know how to defend herself someday. I almost freaked out, but asked her what Adam looked like. She said he was tall, blonde, and had blue eyes. She said, "Mommy, you know how he looks. You know him. He died from a headache. I had to leave the room. You see, 4 months ago she was born. My tall, blonde, blue-eyed material arch pro friend had died of a brain aneurysm at the age of 27. She has not spoken of him since that day, so I'm not sure if I scared her with my reaction or if she had completed her lesson.
I feel like that one is like a little sad more than scary. Our next one is called "There's Someone Under the Bed." I began tucking him in into bed, and he tells me, "Daddy, check for monsters under my bed." I look underneath for amusement and see him, another him, under the bed, staring back at me, quivering and whispering, "Daddy, there's somebody on my bed." That one's kind of creepy.
I didn't expect that.
The next one is probably my favorite one.
The next one is called "The Chair." When my sister, Bessley, and I were kids, our family lived for a while in a charming old farmhouse. We love exploring its dusty corners and climbing the apple tree in the backyard. But our favorite thing was the ghost. We called her Mother because she seemed so kind and nurturing. Some mornings, Betsy and I would wake up, and on each of our nightstands, we find a cup that hadn't been there the night before. Mother had left them there, worried that we'd get thirsty during the night. She just wanted to take care of us. Among the home's original furnished was an antique wooden chair, which we kept against the back wall of the living room. When we were preoccupied watching TV or playing games, Mother would inch the chair forward across the room towards us. Sometimes she managed to move it all the way to the center of the room. We always felt sad putting it back against the wall. Mother just wanted to be near us. Years later, long after we moved out, I found an old newspaper article about the farmhouse original accompaniment, a widow. She murdered her two children by giving them each a cup of poisonous milk before bed. Then she hung herself. The articles include a photo of the farmhouse living room with a woman body hanging from a beam. Beneath her, knocked over, she was that old wooden chair placed exactly in the center of the room. Totally didn't expect that story.
I know, it's literally so creepy. They think that she's just doing it to protect them, but the water, the mother thought was this poisoned milk that she poisoned her children with. And was basically trying to poison them and would kill herself, like, each day over and over again. It's really sad. It's creepy at the same time, too, yes. Though. Our next one is the ghost at home. Last night, a friend rushed me out of the house to catch the opening act at a local bar's music night. After a few drinks, I realized my phone wasn't in my pocket. I checked the table we were sitting at, the bar, the bathrooms, and after no look, I used my friend's phone to call mine. After two rings, someone answered, gave out a low, raspy giggle, and hung up. They didn't answer again. I eventually gave it up as a lost cause and headed home. I found my phone laying on my nightstand right where I left it.
So who picked up the phone?
Yeah, who picked up the phone?
Will anyone really know?
No, but I would be scared to go home after that.
Yep, I was like, nope, moving out.
Come back for more after this break. Hi, and welcome back. For our next ones, a lot of them are a little bit longer than the last ones, but this next one is pretty creepy on its own. We bought an old house, my boyfriend and I. He's in charge of the new construction, converting the kitchen into the master bedroom, for instance, while I'm on wallpaper removal duty. The previous owner papered every wall and ceiling. Removing it is brutal, but oddly satisfying. The best feeling is getting a long peel, similar to your skin when you're peeling from a sunburn. I don't know about you, but I kind of make a game of peeling. On the hunt for the longest piece before it rips. Under a quarter section of paper in every room is a person's name and date. Curiosity got the best of me one night, and I googled one of the names and discovered the person was actually a missing person. The missing date matching the date under the wallpaper. The next day, I made a list of all of the names and dates. Sure enough, each name was for a missing person with dates to match. We notified the police, who naturally sent out the crime scene team. I overheard one text say, "Yep, it's human." Human? What's human? "Ma'am, where's this material you removed from the walls yesterday? This isn't wallpaper you were removing."
It was human skin. That was disgusting.
So the old resident was a murderer and, like, skin people. That's creepy.
That kind of sounds like, what is it? Something of the Lamb.
Silence of the Lambs.
The next one is pretty weird, and it's really shocking.
This is called "I Hate It When My Brother Charlie Has to Go Away." I hate it when my brother Charlie has to go away. My parents constantly try to explain to me how sick he is, that I am lucky for having a brain where all the chemicals flow properly to their destination like undammed rivers. When I complain about how bored I am without a little brother to play with, they try to make me feel bad by pointing out that his boredom likely far surpasses mine. Considering he's confined to a dark room, dark room in an institution. I always beg for them to give him one last chance. Of course, they did it at first. Charlie has been back home several times, each shorter in a duration than the last. Every time, without fail, it all starts again. The neighborhood cats with grown-out eyes showing up in his toy chest. My dad raised their frown, dropped on the baby's side in the dark, in the park across the street. Mom's vitamins replaced by bits of dishwasher tablets. My parents are hustling now, using last chance sparingly. They say his disorder made him charming, makes it easy for him to fake normalcy and to trick the doctors who care for him into thinking he is ready for rehabilitation. That I would just have to put up with my boredom if it means staying safe from him. I hate it when Charlie has to go away. It makes me have to pretend to be good until he's back. That kind of sounds like someone's possessing him. And that it's weird.
So, like, the story is about how everybody thinks his brother has a disorder, and it, like, makes him fake being normal, and it makes him, like, act, like, really normal, and he's a good person and everything. But, like, every time he comes home, like, crazy, like, dangerous things happen, and at the end, how he's talking about it makes him pretend to be good until he's back is because he's doing all of it, and he's pretending that his brother is, which is kind of messed up if you think about it, because his brother has to live in an institution for the rest of his life because of him. The next one is called Guardians. He awoke to the huge insect-like creatures looming over his bed and screamed his lungs out. They hastily left the room, and he stayed up all night, shaking and wondering if it had been a dream. The next morning, there was a tap on the door. Gathering his courage, he opened it to see one of them gently place a plate filled with fried breakfast on the floor, then retreat to a safe distance. Bewildered, he accepted the gift. The creatures chittered excitedly. This happened every day for weeks. At first, he was worried they were fattening up, but after a particularly greasy breakfast left him clenching his chest from heartburn, they were replaced with fresh fruit. As well as cooking, they poured hot, steamy baths for him and even tucked him in when he went to bed. It was bizarre. One night, he woke to gunshots and screaming. He raced down to find a decapitated burglar being devoured by the insects. He was sickened, but disposed of the remains as best as he could. He knew that they had just been protecting him. One morning, the creatures wouldn't let him leave his room. He lay down, confused, but trusting as they ushered him back into bed. Whatever their motives, they weren't going to hurt him. Hours later, a burning pain spread through his body. It felt like his stomach was filled with razor wire. The insects chittered as he spasmed and moaned. It was only when he felt a terrible squirming beneath his skin that he realized the insects hadn't been protecting him. They had been protecting their young.
That's weird. Okay, our next one is Seeing Red. Everyone loves the first day of school, right? New year, new classes, new friends. It's a day full of potential and hope. Before all the dreary depression of reality shows up to ruin all the fun. I like the first day of school for a different reason, though. You see, I have a sort of power. When I look at people, I can sense a sort of aura around them. A colored outline based on how long that person has to live. Most everyone I meet around my age is surrounded by a solid green hue, which means they have plenty of time left. A fair amount of them have a yellowish-orange ting to their ears, which tends to mean a car crash or some other tragedy. Another thing that takes people before their time, as they say, The real fun is when the air is vent into red end of the spectrum, though. Every now and again, I'll see someone who's basically a walking stoplight. Those are the ones who get murdered or kill themselves. It's such a rush to see them and know their time is numbered. With that in mind, I always get to class very early so I can sort out my classmate's face. The first kid who walked in was basically radiating red. I chuckled to myself, too damn bad, bro. But as people kept walking in, they all had the same intense glow. I finally caught a glimpse of my rose tint reflection in the mirror, but I was too stunned to move. Our professor stepped in and locked the door. His air was sickening shade of green. That kind of like sounds like the professor is going to kill them all.
Yeah.
I would assume that.
Yeah. Our next one is they got the definition wrong. It has been said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I understand the sentiment behind the saying, but it's wrong. I entered the building on a bet. I was strapped for cash and didn't buy into the old legends of the hotel to begin with. So 50 bucks was more than enough to get me to do it. It was simple. Just reach the top floor. The 45th floor. Shine my flashlight from a window. And that was it. The hotel was old and broken, including the elevator. So that meant hiking up the stairs. So up the stairs I went. As I reached each platform, I noted the old brass plaques displaying the floor numbers. 15, 16, 17, 18. I felt a little tired as I crept higher, but so far, no ghosts, no cannibals, no demons. Piece of cake. I can't tell you how happy I was as I entered the last stretch of numbers. I joyfully counted them aloud on each platform. 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 44. I stopped and looked back down the steps. I must have miscounted, so I continued up. 44. One more flight. 44. And then down 10 flights. 44. 15 flights. 44. And so it's been for as long as I can remember. So really, insanity isn't doing something repeatedly and expecting different changes. It's knowing that the results will never change, that each door leads to the same staircase, to the same number. It's realizing you no longer fall asleep. It's knowing whether you've been running for days or weeks or years. It's when the sobbing slowly turns into laughter.
Okay, the next one is going to be my daughter learns to count. My daughter woke me around 11:50 last night. My wife and I had picked her up from her friend Sally's birthday party, brought her home, and put her to bed. My wife went into the bathroom to read while I fell asleep watching the Braves game. "Daddy," she whispered, tugging my shirt sleeve, "guess how old I'm going to be next month?" "I don't know, beauty," I said as I slipped on my glasses. "How old?" She smiled and held up four fingers. It's 7:30 now. My wife and I have been up with her for almost 8 hours. She still refuses to tell us where she got them.
Oh. That one's creepy because at first she just think that she's holding up four of her own fingers, but they're talking about she has four random fingers from, like, nowhere. Ooh. Our next one is called Timekeeper. He had been given the watch on his 10th birthday. It was an ordinary gray plastic wristwatch in every respect except for the fact that it was counting down. That is, all the time you have left in the world, son. Use it wisely. And indeed, he did. As the watch ticked away, the boy, now a man, lived life to the fullest. He climbed mountains and swam oceans. He talked and laughed and lived and loved. The man was never afraid, for he knew exactly how much time he had left. Eventually, the watch began its final countdown. The old man stood looking over everything he had done, everything he had built. 5. He shook hands with his old business partner, the man who had been his long friend and confidant. 4. His dog came and licked his hand, earning a pat on the head for his companionship. 3. He hugged his son, knowing that he had been a good father. 2. He kissed his wife on the forehead one last time. 1. The old man smiled and closed his eyes. Then, nothing happened. The watch beeped off once and turned off. The man stood there, very much alive. You would think in that moment he would have been overjoyed. Instead, for the first time in his life, the man was scared. Come back for more for story number 8.
Okay, our next story is going to be The Perfect Plan. On Monday, I came up with the perfect plan. No one even knew we were friends. On Tuesday, he stole the gun from his dad. On Wednesday, we decided to make our move during the following day pep rally. On Thursday, while the entire school was in the gym, we waited just outside the doors. I was to use the gun on whoever walked out first. Then he could take the gun and go into the gym blasting. I woke up to Mr. Quinn, the guidance counselor, shot him in the face 3 times. He fell back into the gym, dead. The shots were deafening. We heard screams in the auditorium. No one could see us yet. I handled the gun and whispered, "Your turn." He ran into the gym and started firing. I followed a moment after. He hadn't hit anyone yet. Kids were scrambling and hiding. It was mayhem. I ran up behind him and tackled him. We struggled. I wrenched the gun out of his hands, turned it on him, and killed him. I closed his mouth forever. On Friday, I was anointed a hero. It was indeed the perfect plan. That sounds insane.
So they were... Oh, wait. Are you guys still recording?
That honestly got to me.
That one was really good. This next one, it surprised me when I read it. I was like... And it actually explains a lot. Okay. It's called Warrior of God. If God exists, why is there so much evil in the world? It's a common question, but is misplaced. All things must have balance, light and dark, good and evil, sound and silence. Without the one, the other cannot exist. So if that's true, then God does nothing to fight evil? That might be your follow-up question, of course. He fights evil relentlessly. I'm D'Artillion, one of his most holy and righteous angels. I roam the earth, disposing of evil wherever I can find it. I kill the monsters you don't want to ever know about. I crush them completely so you can sleep at night. You humans have no idea how many of you live because of the work I do. But what about Stalin, Hitler, Ted Bundy, Jack the Ripper? Well, those are the minor ones I had to let live for balance. The ones I destroy are too horrible and vile to survive. What's funny is while I would wager you have never heard the name D'Artillion in any religious text, I bet you've heard of me. Americans, for example, have their own name for me, Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. Yeah. It's a lot to take in.
Dang. Okay, our next story is called Hell. There is no pearly gates. The only reason I knew I was in a cave was because I had just passed the entrance. The rock wall rose behind me, with no ceiling in sight. I knew this was it. This was what religion talked about, what man feared. I just entered the gates to hell. I felt the presence of the cave as if it was a living, breathing creature. The stench of rotten flesh overwhelmed me. There was the voice, aching from inside it all and all around. "Welcome. Who are you?" I asked, trying to keep my composure. "You know," the thing answered. I did know. "You are the devil." I struttered quickly, loosening my composure. "Why me? I lived as good as I could.
The silence took over the space as my words died out. It seemed like an hour went by before the response came. What did you expect? The voice was penetrating but patient. I don't know. I never believed any of this, I uttered. Is that why I'm here? Silence, I continued. They say the greatest trick you ever pulled was convincing the world you don't exist. No, the greatest trick I ever pulled was convincing the world that there is an alternative. There is no God. I shivered. The cave trembled with the words, I am God. That was interesting.
Our next one is called The Accident. It was 1 a.m. and Guy Halverson sat in his dark living room. He hadn't moved for over an hour. The accident earlier that evening kept playing over and over in his mind. The light turned red, but he was in a hurry and accelerated. An orange blur came from his right, and then in a split second, there was a violent jolt. Then the bicyclist rolled around his hood and fell out of sight on the pavement. Horns blared angrily and he panicked, stepping on the gas and screeching away from the chaos into the darkness, shaking and keeping an eye on his rearview mirror until he got home. Why did you run, you idiot? He never committed a crime before this and punished himself by imagining years in jail, his career gone, his family gone, his future gone. Why not just go to police right now? You can afford a lawyer. Then someone tapped on the front door, and his world suddenly crumbled away beneath him. They found me. There was nothing he could do but answer. Running would only make matters worse. His body trembling, he got up and went to the door and opened it. A police officer stood under the porch light. Mr. Halverson? Asked a grim officer. He let out a defeated sigh. Yes, let me. I'm terribly sorry, but I'm afraid I have some bad news. Your son's bike was struck by a hit-and-run driver this evening. He died at the scene. I'm very sorry for your loss. Ooh. He killed his own son.
Without even knowing it. Okay, our next story is called Next Time You Know Better. Have you ever walked into your room and found a vampire? No, not the sexy kind, but a foul creature with boning limbs and ashen skin. The kind that swirls as you enter, like a beast about to pounce. The kind that roots you to the spot with its shaken, hyperonic eyes, rerunning you, unable to flee, as you watch the hideous thing uncoil from the shadows. Has your heart started racing through your legs? His heart started racing, though your legs refused to. Have you ever felt time slow as the creature crosses the room in the darkness of a blink? Have you shuddered with fear when it's placed one clawed hand atop your hand and another under your chin so it can tilt you, exposing your neck? Have you squirmed as its rough, dried tongue slides down your cheek, over your jaw, to your throat, and a slithering search to find seeking your artery? Have you felt its hot breath release in a hiss against their throbbing silently as if savoring the moment? Have you then experienced a shaking, sucking blackness? As you discovered that not all vampires feed on blood. Some feed on memories. Will have you? Maybe not. But let me rephrase the question. Have you ever walked into your room and suddenly forgot why you came in? Yes, that's happened to me all the time. So what does that mean?
That happens to me all the time, and it's really creepy because what if it is like that, though? Then, like, it happens all the time. Our next one is called Hands. The doctor pulled the stethoscope ear tips out and hung the device around his neck. Mr. Weatherby, all of your tests have come back negative and my examination shows nothing abnormal. Adam knew what was coming next. I'm not crazy, doctor. I'm sorry, but there is no physical reason for why you occasionally lose control of your hands. A psychologist can help. I don't need therapy. I need answers. They seem to have a life of their all on their own. I can't hold a job. I'm under investigation for assault. I almost killed my neighbor. This can't go on. I'll try anything at this point. After 2 weeks on a new medication, Adam saw no progress and grew increasingly depressed. He was convinced that despite what the doctor said, it was not a psychological problem. That night, a frustrated and angry Adam sat in a chair and drank bourbon. Drunk and helpless, he stumbled to the garage and started the table saw. Then slowly lowered his wrist toward the screaming blade. Detective Armstrong entered the garage where several uniformed officers stood over the blood-soaked body. "So what do we got?" he asked, taking in the blood-splattered scene. "This is a weird one, Detective." "How so? Take a look at the body." "He apparently chopped off his hands with the table saw and bled to death." Armstrong knelt down. "And?" "And we can't find his hands anywhere."
His hands ran away.
Okay. Okay, your next one is called He Stood Against the Window. I don't know why I looked up, but when I did, I saw him there. He stood against the window. His forehead rested against the glass, and his eyes were still and light, and he smiled a lipstick red cartoon grin. And he just stood there in the window. My wife was upstairs sleeping. My son was in his crib, and I can't move. I froze, and I watched him looking past me through the glass. "Oh, please, no." His smile never moved, but he put a hand up and sliced it down the glass, watching me, with muttered hair and yellow skin and face through the window. I couldn't do anything. I just stayed there, frozen, feet still in the bushes. I was pronging. I looked into my home. He stood against my window. Oh, does that mean, like, he has a twin, or?
They were, like, outside their house, and he's inside their house staring at them. So they have, like, nowhere to go. Our next one is called Fallers. This one is kind of intense. People started falling from the sky by the close of the decade. They were never clothed, always naked, always a petrifying grin on their faces. It had been just a few at first, but then hundreds and thousands would fall at a time, destroying cars, homes, blocking off highways. Strange discoveries were made upon research. They were human, but lacked any blood, intestines, even a heart. No one could explain the hideous grins they had, or even where they came from. It was a woman in Costa Rica who made the latest and most disturbing discovery. She recognized one of the fallen bodies as a long-dead relative, one who had died back when she had been a teenager. Then more and more identifications were made. Soon, people were picking out their long-dead loved ones amongst the video feeds, cadaver piles, and crematoriums. No one could explain why they were coming back, falling from the sky. Even more distressing, after disposing of the bodies, it wouldn't be long until the same body came plummeting from the sky again. You could not get rid of them, no matter what. People were getting killed by the higher volume of falling bodies, and soon after burial, they too began to fall. My mother was killed when a body landed on her car, crushing her. The next week, the news reported a body that had gotten lodged into an airplane windshield. I saw my mother's grinning face, the happiest I had ever seen her. They say when hell is full, the dead shall walk the earth. What about heaven?
Ooh. Okay, our next one is called The Happiest Day of My Life. I watch as my son-to-be father-in-law held his daughter's hand as he walked down the aisle. Tears streamed down his face as the wedding march that played in the background reminded him that in a few minutes he would be watching me hold his daughter's hand and slipping on her ring. He walked up to the altar and I took hold of her hand, grinning to her from ear to ear. It was the happiest day of my life. My bride's father got down on his knees and started begging, "Please, I did what you asked. Just please give me my daughter back." I glared at him. "Shut up and stop ruining the moment. If you sit back down and enjoy the ceremony, maybe I'll tell you where I've hidden the rest of her body." The rest of her body?
That's creepy.
People.
The next one is called Hidden. "Where are you?" I scream, panicked. I run through the abandoned farm. I can't find her. Not in the old house, not in the barn. I run into the empty field, heart racing. As I scan the area, I run into a mound of dirt and trip, sprawling to the ground. Getting up, it hits me. Abandoned farm. I tripped over freshly tilted earth. Crouching down, I start frantically clawing with my hands, scooping handfuls of dirt. I hit something hard. Wood. "Are you in there?" I cry, pressing my ear to the wood. I hear muffled cries. I start digging again, but realize it's taking too long. Looking around, I see a garden shed. I sprint to it, ripping the door open. I see a shovel, still caked in dirt. Probably the same one that bastard buried her with. I grab it, running back. I started digging with purpose. Soon, the wooden box is exposed. I toss the shovel and rip open the crate. She stares back at me, eyes wide, bound, gagged, but alive. I sigh with relief. Thank God. I reach into my bag, pulling out my rag and chloroform. I crouch down, placing it over her face. She struggles, faints. I toss her over my shoulder. "Ah, hell," my brother says as he walked back into the truck with a smile. "You found her." "Yep, you almost had me, though," I laugh. "All right, my turn. Where did you put her?" I gesture to the creek area. "Somewhere over there. Drowning's an issue, though." "Jerk," he says, running off. I smile, watching him go. I love adult hide-and-seek.
That is crazy.
That's really, really... I did not expect that end at all. Okay, our next one is called My Favorite Support Group. "Look, I'll be the first to admit I'm a complete bastard. I'm also lazy. I'm only here to find the idiot because there's almost always an idiot. This support group is pretty typical. We connected online, decided on a quiet place, and now we're all sitting across ledge in a circle. Real kumbaya crap. Jeremy takes the lead, pouring everyone a cup of tea, and as he starts talking, I'm Jeremy. You can drink your tea, but only after explaining why you're here. I'll start. Jordan tells us he's never been loved. I can see why. The guy's ugly as sin. He slips his tea while the mousy chick speaks next. Mayu, she says, my parents, short and sweet, no blubbering, got a mire. Mayu, she's probably not the idiot. Next to talk are a legless veteran, a broke businessman, a needle-tracked junkie, and a diseased old crane. Then it's my turn. I'm an ass. Everybody hates me. I take a loud, annoying slurp of oolong as the fat kid with the black eyes goes next, telling his boring fat kid's sob story. Afterwards, we're all sitting quietly when Jeremy kneels over. Then Miles rolled back and she slumped forward. Only the fat kid reacts. What's happening? He whines. I thought this was a suicide group, support group. Found the idiot. It is, I say, spitting out my mouthy tea, then support it. No one wants to die alone, kid. Oh. How ghost white he turns, looking into his cup. I love it. These suicide meetups are a saddest dream, and I'll never
have to lift a finger. I told you I'm a lazy bastard.
So he is killing them?
Yeah.
And, like, he's saying it's a suicide group, but he's killing them.
Yes.
Okay.
Bye. We hope you enjoy this episode. Please come back for another. We will continue on more scary short stories. Goodbye.
Bye. Peace.